I've listened to your work for an awfully long time, and it was when I first heard it, I heard nothing else like it on the planet. And I'm thinking now it's 2012, and I'm imagining you tonight going and reproducing this piece of work, and I just don't even imagine, I can't even imagine how you start. As a listener, it somewhat felt both composed and random, and I don't understand how you approach a live performance of Silver Apples of the Moon, for example.
Well, it isn't played note by note. I'm using a lot of samples, to rest you assured.
and these are samples of the original
Work. Yeah,
so you have the original tapes, I assume. Real tapes.
I had the original tapes. Who knows what the original tapes were, but I have tapes that I transferred to digital. I'll answer the question, and I'll respond to the initial thing. When you said, when you first heard it, there was nothing like it, right? That's probably true, because I'm trying to avoid doing a whole history here.
Let's do a synopsis, because I think a lot of people just don't know.
I'm trying to find the best way to do that. I was born in 33, so 1963 I had turned 30. Right. Prior to that, about 3 to 5 years prior to that, the whole world was about to change. It was really clear. Marshall McLuhan was about to write the first book that had the thing that everybody knows. They don't know him, but they know the medium is the message, which was Marshall McLuhan at that point. There was just a sense among some of us anyway that the world was about to change. Nothing was going to be the same, apropos of the music didn't sound like anything that was there before. And I was a composer of traditional music, avant-garde traditional music. I was a clarinetist. I was playing in the San Francisco Symphony. I was playing concerts, concertos, touring Beethoven and, you know, through Schoenberg and the whole thing. I was a very accomplished musician. I wanted to be composing, that's what I really wanted to do. I was making my living playing. Along comes this new technology that it hadn't happened, but the potential for it was there. And I thought to myself, this is around 1961, I thought to myself, I don't know anything about technology, but this world is about to change. And what's going to change is that there would be the possibility that people can buy cheaply. The credit card had just come out, and and the transistor had just come into being. So not only was it going to be cheap, you could buy it with no money.
I love this.
So it just felt really like something special was going to happen. So to make a long story short, it is a long story because I'm writing a book for MIT about it, but to make it very short, I made a decision early on, like 1961, 62, that I was going to try to figure out if I could do something with this technology that would be meaningful. The very fact that I wanted to do it almost meant that I needed to do it, because who else was going to do it except somebody who had my background in music who wanted to do it with technology. So the issue that came, and this is now answering your question, I think the issue that came to me was, well, what would I have? You know, what would you do with it? And I realized,
and just to be clear, you saw somebody with a
there were no synthesizers,
nothing.
There was a huge digital thing that was at Columbia Princeton,
right?
The whole room. There were no objects.
Was not Raymond Scott doing stuff back then? And
I don't.
Yeah,
if he was,
if they were,
I didn't
there were
know
walls
about it.
Of, okay, fine, fair enough.
I certainly didn't see anything, and historically, I haven't found anything. There were people doing things with theremins, and you know, there were people tinkering with various things, but there was no object you could actually make music on that I knew about.
Yes.
I still don't know about. So
fair enough.
So there's nothing. And so what the thing I'm talking about is what I don't know. You know, what would we do with this technology? What would it be 100 years down the line? And I realized, I met up with this guy, Don Buchla, and he felt he could do what I wanted to do.
Buchla's an engineer, he's an inventor.
Yeah, he was... really brilliant and you know, off the wall and everything I was looking for. And so we began to, I had to learn about technology. So I was learning from him about transistors and all this stuff, trying to decide what this thing would actually be and what it should do. The one thing I realized at the beginning was I didn't want to make a musical instrument. What's the point to making a new musical instrument? What are you going to play with that new musical instrument? You're going to play... All the instruments have come into being because of the music we made. And the music we made were there because of the music. Marshall McLuhan also has a great thing, is that first we invent a machine and then the machine invents us. So the people who invented the first flutes, then the flute invented all the people who played the flute after that, right? And that produced rules and ways in which we're going to do beautiful music, but are we really going to create an electronic machine that's going to do that better than a piano can do it? Or than a clarinet can do it? Or a Stradivarius different. Violin can do it? Right. No, so it's a new music you want. Is it a new music or is it a new piece of music you want to do or a new kind of music? And I decided it was a no-brainer. It had to be a new kind of music. First thing, no black and white keyboard, because how the hell are you going to do anything you want on the piano? You can't do that on the piano. You can't do that on the piano. So no, it couldn't be, because
so the
it
controller,
was
the whatever it is from your hands to it has to be.
I didn't
different.
Know what they were, but it could not be a musical instrument. Right. It couldn't even look like a musical instrument, and that's where it started. And so, if you just listen to the beginning of Silver Apples and Moon that came out in 67. The Moog with Herbert Deutsch, I think they got together 1 year, a year and a half after we had actually started. We finished before they were actually, we were just getting started at that
you
point.
You and Don Buchla and the partnership and the creation.
Yeah, of this.
Took place more like in 66, like.
No. We were going by the, I started Silver Apples Moon in 1965. So I wasn't Silver Apples Moon. I started working on something, got the commission, and it came out in 67. So the machine was done at 64, 65 season. So I don't know what part of the year it was. So it was about a year before they actually started this other thing. That was the only thing there. You know, we were doing this. Now, if you listen to the opening of Silver Apples of the Moon, and I do this in a lecture, and the opening of Switched on Bach, it is exactly what you felt when you first heard my music. I never heard anything like this before.
Exactly.
If you had heard Switched on Bach, you wouldn't have said that, right?
That's right. You'd say, oh,
what
this
was
is
it?
Really
it was
different.
Bach.
Yeah, right.
It was Bach. It was really brilliant. It was fun. It was, you know, out of this world.
Yeah.
But it was Bach, and it was music. It was the exact thing I didn't want to do. So I've pitched my I threw away the clarinet, and especially after Silver Apples came in, because that was a big hit, and I knew I had the aptitude to do it, and I didn't see anyone else really seeing this. Everybody was doing exactly what was expected, was that they created instruments out of electronics to play music as we knew it. Yeah, it's different pieces of music than we ever had. I mean, rhythms, all of that stuff, sounds. It's not bad. There's nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't what I was trying to look for. I wouldn't have given up the clarinet to do that. You know, I don't want to make it sound like I didn't think that was a good thing to do. I think it was a great thing to do. And
but it's a monstrous leap as opposed to...
But for me, it was something else. And I may be the only one who ends up doing that. I won't be. I mean, it's clear now that I won't be. But for a long time, it looked like I was going to be the only one doing that. Even the avant-garde serious composers, the fine art composers, were extending things like 12-tone technique and that stuff, you know, doing the... Or noise pieces, because they were already doing noise with percussion. I was trying to find what it meant. You know, it's taken me a long time. Now, back to the Silver Apples and how I do it.
In 2012. And
right. I, when I did that, I realized when and I was really fortunate that I got that commission from a record company.
Yeah, this is Nonsuch Records. This, at the time, a pretty new label, coming to you and saying, "We'll give you what, $1,000?"
$500. No, it was. I had been lecturing because of my connection. I do lecture well, and because of my connection to the symphony world and to the avant-garde world, I was asked to lecture a lot as a young man. Mm-hmm. And I was lecturing about, and I was about to talk about this, and I'll put this in context. I was lecturing about the fact that electronics that we're now beginning to see has its deepest place on the record, that that the record itself could become a medium with a message, and that message is electronic.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew it wasn't right. I knew we were going to record Beethoven's symphonies and things, but I felt I used to say that I would think that people, once they realize what they've done, that doing high fidelity recordings of a symphony orchestra or a string quartet, and then so you can take it in your living room and not see it as it was intended, as people playing for people, would be unethical and immoral.
Hmm.
And that what the record medium should be doing is commissioning new work for this new medium. And I knew it would never happen, but that was the farthest reach of what I thought it ought to be thought of. But then suddenly in 1966, this man comes to my studio on Bleecker Street, and I was having rock and roll guys from the Grateful Dead and other groups would come up and visit in the middle of the morning, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning after they'd played, and to see the mad scientist with them working with all these wires and lights and everything. In the middle of this comes this guy, and he gives me my lecture.
And this guy is
the Jack Holtzman. He was the president of Nonsuch, and it was well after midnight, and and he said they'd offer me $500 to do this thing, and I'd be the first. And I'd never heard of Nonsuch Records. I had some, but I didn't even know. And it was new, and it was in those days. You had Decca and RCA, Nonsuch. What is this? It's like a joke. And I thought he was making fun of me. I thought he was at one of my lectures, because I never imagined that it would actually happen. So I said, I don't have time for you. And I kicked him out. And he came back the next morning, and I couldn't find Nonsuch. When I realized what had happened, I couldn't find their phone number. And he came back the next night and raised his hands in front of me, and he said, "Don't kick me out yet." He said, listen to me. He said, "We had a meeting, and we will offer you $1,000. And I said, "I'll take it." So, but that was how that came about, and I was really fortunate, you know, maybe he had heard me lecture, maybe people knew about what I was saying and doing, and he really thought this was the right thing to do. I never talked to him about that. I don't really know. I haven't seen him for years, but I always thought that after I realized that he was serious, that he, because it was an amazing job he did with that record company. They did the first world music. And
absolutely, they were important. Their whole Explorer series recorded, you know, places in that we didn't even know
existed,
yeah. Let alone what their music sounded like.
With and little tape recorders and microphones out in the middle of the jungle. I mean, he was remarkable, and I do believe that he actually, this was his thought. I don't think he knew that I had thought that.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was a logical kind of thought, sort of pie in the sky, but sort of the way it should go. And it was successful. So luckily I had that. Now, back to the performance of Silver Apples of the Moon. I began to work. The first thing I really did was, first I was working on things. I was making music for dance and things using the new Buchla. It was just, we just finished it, you know. It was
we're talking now back
in the day, 1960, not live 65, performance today. Right.
Yeah.
Right, and I'm in my studio, and I'm thinking toward records. That's really what I'm thinking about. And then in the process of that, so when the commission came, then I ended up doing a series of records. But I grew up as a performer, and I'm trying to think, what would you do if you're going to have something that exists primarily so that it's always there in one form? It should be perfect in your estimation. So you don't let it out until you don't want to make any changes to it. In the meantime, you've thrown a lot of stuff away. And what's special about being in front of people? Well, what's special about being in front of people is responding to them and have them respond to you and to make decisions as you're going. If you're not playing Mozart and you're not playing Beethoven.
That's what performance really
is. Yeah, yeah. It's a, but as a composer, going out in front of them is actually remixing the music. There wasn't DJs those days.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Remixing the music and adding new stuff as you go along and bringing some of the stuff you felt wasn't perfect but was good and bringing that stuff in and having it turn into a new thing. And my idea was I would just gather my materials forever. They would go out.
And when you say gather your materials, because as
a combination of the way the music was made with patches, right?
Right, and we're talking patches now from one plug hole of an oscillator out into a filter with another that goes in, right?
But much more complicated. You have, because it's not like the Moog. It's more like an analog computer. So you take a voltage, which is pure energy that goes from 0 to 100% back to zero in a particular shape that you molded with your finger. So it goes, if you were to make it as an amplitude of something, it would go, oh, okay? So it's not tong, but it's oh. But that doesn't make that sound, it's just a voltage. Now you take out of that, then you've got that as a patch now. So it goes, whoa. And you take out of that one thing that goes to a panner. So now the whoa, whoa goes left to right to back. And you take it and process it so it doesn't go from 0 to 100, it goes from 0 to 3, but in the same time and in exactly the same shape, and put that into the pitch. Now it goes whoa, and now you put it into the filter. And now that one thing is going out to 100 places to create what I can do with my voice in no time. But it's not my voice. It's this new sound, which is now gestural and composable. So it's an entirely different paradigm. It's not playing notes. It's playing groups of notes. And the idea, I could have a group of notes and shape them, the time of them. And that's a little patch.
Right.
I put my finger down, and that little patch goes. And I can add to that patch by putting my finger down on another key, pressing hard while that's going, and make it all go faster. So this time it goes, next time it goes, but it's the same gesture.
That's it.
I know that gives you some idea of what we're doing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's hard for people to get because it's not playing music. It's what I wasn't going to do. It is composing. I don't know what it is.
To this day,
I can't give you a name for it. So the idea with the stuff is these patches, which ended up on tape, because I was going to put them on a record. A lot of those things I got rid of, and I finally mixed them. And all the things you do in the studio with this, then I play that back and have another patch, and I'm playing against it. And it wasn't just one note like I just did. It was a whole series of things that would go. So my thought was I could bring samples back, I mean one phrase back, and alter it so that if I now pressed a key, that patch would go faster. But there wasn't a machine that could do that. But that was my idea. My idea was that I was really inventing DJ.
In context today,
that's, yeah. In the context today, that's the closest thing you've got, or remix. And remix doesn't really do it either. The DJs are more because they're going and taking an existing thing and make it faster or slower and things like that. The remix is really, it can be that. So we can get into semantics. But it's in that general world. That's more toward what I do than the other. Plus, new patches.
I see.
That I'm adding on the spot. I mean, I patch them before I go in, but playing on the spot. I don't know what I'm going to do first tonight. And I could get myself into a bind because I've got a bunch of apparatus that triggers things and does things. And I will sit down with my notebook and sort of give myself a plan of where to go, because otherwise I'm totally lost. But I do believe in sitting there and getting a sense of where I want to go. I'm not inventing new music, because all the music is there, but it's in some kind of raw state,
right,
that it can now be reassessed. And I do use little tiny keyboards and things, because I do want to do some things with pitch, but not play the whole thing. I set a pitch so when I go, when I go, whoa, it'll be somewhere around high E flat above C, to an octave above C.
So you'll surprise yourself this evening in some ways. I mean, you'll have some sort of plot.
It's not really so much surprise as make decisions.
Okay.
That I hadn't thought of before, the timing of how long, what I should start with and how long it should last, and things like that.
Could you describe the apparatus that's in front of you?
Yeah, I have a Buchla 200E, which is analog, digital. It's a cross, it's not hybrid, but it has all the things you want from the ability to take those cables and put them into different things like a computer. But it interfaces with a computer through MIDI. So I have Ableton Live, mm-hmm, and I can take my sounds that I'm performing out of the Buchla. They go into the computer, and I can modify them with little keyboards and things in Ableton. Ableton can go into the Buchla, so if I'm playing things that are wonderful keyboards, they're not keyboards, touch plate things, mm-hmm, that Buchla makes. That I use, and so I can slide my finger up and down, and it makes something happen, and with an oscillator. But the sample from Silver Apples of the Moon, that's now a digital sample, comes back into the Buchla and gets modified again.
That's beautiful.
And it'll open, for instance, the way I decided to open is with this kind of grainy sound that sort of tickles, and then I have the sample of the opening of Silver Apples of Moon looped, and it's going to come in, and it's going to tickle with it. And when it tickles with it, it alters the quality of the sound you just heard tickle, and then gradually increase the original so that you begin to hear the tickling against that. And I have another one where I can swirl it at a different pitch whenever I want, and so it becomes a different sound. It's all this sample that comes in, and finally it takes over. Now you're hearing the opening of Silver Apples of the Moon, that kind of stuff.
It's great to see you still so excited about something that you started with so long ago.
It's just coming into fruition. I haven't actually performed in public until the 200E, and I didn't even at the beginning at that point.
The 200E is
the new Buchla.
Yeah.
And
let me ask you just one more time. The last time you said you didn't start performing until the... So what time period is that? Just recently?
Oh, it's in the last 10 years.
Okay.
I've been invited to perform, because they didn't understand that you don't go up and just play a piece, right?
Uh-huh.
And then I was working on things for children. I have a lot of software for children.
What is that?
Oh.
Tell me. You're going to reach for the iPad.
15 years.
So my one of the only... other things I was curious about was whether you were interested in some of the newer technologies. And here you are holding an iPad with a program called Pitch Painter, which is your... So you're running your finger over a screen, and small red squares are coming up. The lower you are on the screen, the lower the note. And it just records all that. And when you hit a play button, all of those notes that you just played in a...
Or
some
sort
of sequence.
You could do that. And it plays back the exact performance you just did.
That is beautiful.
Yeah, but look at this.
You should describe what you're doing, because people
will
hear this.
Yeah, it's a painting pad. They paint with their finger, and so I've gone to... I have four regions of the world,
mm-hmm,
and the first one was U.S., but now we're in the Middle East, and I'm getting Middle Eastern instruments,
uh-huh,
and I chose one of three instruments, and we're playing it. And now it'll play the whole thing back that I did that way, but it'll also...
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, it's playing the finger pattern that you ran across the screen. I am a kid.
Yeah.
I still want to...
And you can save them. And this is what I was talking about.
Yeah.
It's $2.99.
Right, right. Could
with
you
a
ever?
Credit card.
Right, exactly. Could you ever?
And I've got the kids 3 years old doing this.
Yeah.
And
that's fascinating.
Yeah, and I've been doing this for a long time. I have a whole bunch of them, and the kids have grown up on them.
Uh-huh. A whole bunch. Are there other iPad apps or?
This is my first iPad app, but they were on CD-ROMs.
I see, of course.
15 years now since the CD-ROM came out, and they have them in schools. And this one just came out, though, the iPad, because it actually is you had to use a mouse.
Right.
And this is great because you can just draw.
Oh, gosh.
So I play with, technology. I love it. But I'm excited. I'm excited because when I made these decisions, which I said at the beginning, to give up my clarinet and that whole life and to go into this other thing, I thought I was going to be like a caveman. Maybe people think I am. But a caveman and, drawing on the wall that people would find 200,000 years, but I thought maybe 100 years, and would begin to, deal with it, that what I could offer them at that moment in time, you can't ever be born again at that moment in time. That moment in time, it's hard for people to understand, but it was so special. If you really knew that you were about to enter this world that we're in right now, and I thought, think about Halley, the astronomer who predicted the comet would come back 70 years from the time he did it. He wasn't going to be there, right?
Exactly. You're here.
Yeah, but I'm here, and that's what's so exciting. And now I can I didn't create the world we've come into, but I participated. I definitely impacted
and inspired.
And now I'm here doing it.
Yes.
And doing things I thought I would never get to do, which was the live performances. What I was talking about is straightforward right now. It didn't exist at that time. And in fact, it hasn't existed until maybe 10 years ago.
Well, it's fascinating. This whole festival, I've been to this festival before. I'm certainly a follower of a lot of this music. And watching the technology enable people who think in different ways than the normal mindset of standard musical notation, and the sounds that are coming out, the visceral sounds that come out of these speakers these days. And it's all really exciting. It's hard to imagine you're talking about now for the period from 1961 to we're talking a span of 50 years. It's hard to imagine now it's in 2012 what 2062 is going to bring. Can you even think about what that is?
Yeah, I haven't. I'm not going
to. You're too tired.
No, I can't. I can't imagine. Although, it's a big. It's a big topic. It's very, very complex. It's raised issues that for me, because I was at it so early, and I didn't follow anything. I didn't have any examples to go by, so I set something in motion, with a trajectory which is probably not clearly. I don't think there are imitators of what I do, and it still doesn't sound like anything else.
That's great. I can't wait to hear this tonight.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And thank you for all you've done. I mean, honestly.
Well, I appreciate that.
I know my life wouldn't have ever been the same.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's great.
It meant a lot to me.
I hope.
Yeah.